Are you on the roller coaster ride of parenting a teenager? Are you anticipating this new season of your parenting life? Maybe you're fearful that you're going to do or say the wrong thing. Here's a question for you. What is your goal in parenting your teenager or soon-to-be teen? Today at the Radio Backyard Fence, some help and a whole heaping lot of hope for you from Melissa Kruger, who's been thinking less about the prescriptions of parenting and much more about the principles. She says this season kind of snuck up on her and her husband, and when the family environment began to change, she had to work through the best way to navigate the new world of older children and decide what practices needed to change and what principles stayed the same. You're going to hear more about that straight ahead on Chris Fabry Live. Welcome to the Daily Roller Coaster Ride. Thanks to our team behind the scenes. Ryan McConaughey is doing all things technical. Trish is our producer. Lynn will be answering your calls. And our friends and partners who support us, thank you. I'm already hearing from Backfence partners who saw the video we sent out today. If you are a partner, make sure you open the email that you should receive today. It's literally from my Backfence. See Gideon, see Gimli, see Dodo, see the chickens, the quail that I look at every day out my studio window, and hear the rest of the story that I started last week but I never finished. That's part of what you receive when you support us each month, the Backfence post, the video. Plus, our thank you to everyone this month, whether you're a partner with us or give a one-time gift. Philip Keller's A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. Go to chrisfabrylive.org, scroll down, you'll see how to be a friend or partner. Thank you for your support, chrisfabrylive.org, or you can call 866-95-FABRY. Melissa Kruger is Vice President of Discipleship Programming at the Gospel Coalition, author of a number of books, including Growing Together, Walking with God in the Season of Motherhood, and the children's book, Wherever You Go, I Want You to Know. Her husband, Mike, is the president of Reformed Theological Seminary. They live in Charlotte, North Carolina, three children. Featured resource, Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. Melissa, welcome to the program. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Talk about the brave new world of parenting that we're in. It's different than when you and I were teenagers, right?
That's right. It does have, you know, I think pretty distinct differences just with the amount of information coming at us as parents and our teens. I mean, you know, in a little device called a cell phone. I mean, there's a lot in that little device that, you know, just wasn't accessible to us when we were growing up.
Well, and parents, you know, in the culture, parents were viewed in a different way when I was a kid and probably when you were as well. There was this respect that you had for your parents, or respect, there was this mutual thing that was kind of going back and forth, at least that I recall. Maybe I've got rose-colored glasses on. but even the way that the media treats parents, or treats dads especially, treats men in this culture, can tear that down for young people.
That's right. And I would actually also say our teachers in any authority in a teen's life. So, you know, teachers used to be the person you would respect in the classroom. And now they are the ones to be questioned a lot of the times, and maybe not trusted. Both parents, both educators, all of that. And so it really creates a lot of confusion, both for the parent and for the teen, to be quite honest. It's really confusing and unhelpful when a teen actually thinks they're in charge of their life. That's a pretty scary place for them to be.
So I say that you have three children. You actually are the mom of three young adults now. So look back, what surprised you the most when you entered that teenage stage with your oldest?
Yeah, you know, I can remember distinctly sitting in the cul-de-sac with some girlfriends. We were all neighbors. We would sit in the cul-de-sac and the kids would ride their ridey toys around, you know, the cul-de-sac as they do. And all of a sudden, my oldest daughter wanted to hang out with the moms more than she wanted to be riding little bikes or doing things with the younger kids. She was the oldest of the kind of group of kids in the cul-de-sac. And my first instinct was to push her away and to tell her, go play with the kids, go play with the kids. And it struck me after that, that I had done the wrong thing, that she actually wanted adult interaction. And I was kind of not impatiently or anything, just shooing her away. And it hit me that night. I can remember thinking to myself, maybe it's not that teenagers stop wanting our involvement. Maybe it's we don't invite them to grow up and be part of conversations when they're ready. And so it really transformed some of how I was interacting with her. I was like, oh, here she is at age 12 wanting to interact with these moms. And I'm telling her, go play with the kids. Well, maybe that's why they go try to find other, you know, teenagers, because we're actually shooing them away a little more than we realize. And so that changed how I started parenting. And I started inviting her in to even my friendships, not to be a friend, but to be a part of those conversations as was age appropriate.
What you just modeled right there is what I think trips parents up, just people in general, but parents especially, and that is that parenting is not about not making mistakes, because you're going to make mistakes. Parenting is more about seeing that and responding to it with your kids, and sometimes of apologizing for a mistake that you make when you finally see it. I realize that, you know, this and your estimation in the child's eyes, the teenager's eyes, goes up rather than going down. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. If I could tell any parent any piece of advice for any stage is, but particularly in the teen years, just learn how to say a good apology. It's a really good life skill, and I'm not sure that we teach it anymore in a lot of places, but learning how to just say, you know, let's say kids left the socks on the floor again and you had told them 20 times, but in that, if I'm now yelling at my kid, how can you leave the floor? You know, whatever. If I'm losing it, I have to take responsibility for my response. I always say my response is my responsibility as a parent. I'm the adult. So if I, you know, I have to exhibit patience, kindness, love, joy, peace, and patience, all the fruit of the spirit, regardless of what happens. That's what I'm expecting them to do. And so I really think there are just so many opportunities as parents to come to them and say, hey, I am concerned that you aren't, you know, living up to whatever standard I've set for you. But when I, you know, yelled or was impatient or unkind, that was my fault. I should not have responded that way. I'm really sorry I responded that way. And so we can still tell our kids where they've fallen short of what we've asked of them, but we need to explain to them when we've fallen short of how we should have behaved as well.
There's one of the principles that we're talking about today about parents. And the question that I asked on Facebook today is, what's the best advice you were given about raising teenagers? And there's some great responses there. We're going to get to those. And we'll get to your calls as well. Back fence, 877-548-3675. Melissa Krueger has written Parenting with Hope. It's our featured resource at the website, chrisfabrylive.org. More with Melissa straight ahead on Moody Radio. Need a little help raising your teenager? Parenting with Hope is our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org. Melissa Krueger is with us. And if you have a situation in your life that you want to talk about, 877-548-3675. And I want to ask you, Melissa, as you were considering writing this, was there a fear, like a concern, that you had to know all the answers to all the parenting struggles and be the expert? You know, that'll keep you from putting anything down on the page, won't it?
Absolutely. There were actually tons of fears. I'm walking through motherhood with dear friends who are facing every sort of situation. I mean, you know, even today I got a text from a friend about a a child with an eating disorder. Yeah, it's a friend of mine, her daughter. And so what I know is that these years can be wonderful. They can have such special moments, but they can also be so difficult. Certain things that are going on with teens, and difficult in a way that is very isolating. Because it's one thing when your toddler is struggling and having tantrums at Target, and you know, you're like, oh my goodness, let me tell you what happened today. A lot of times with our teens, we can't talk about what's going on because it's their story. And so it can for a mom or for a parent, it can be a difficult season because they're not always at liberty to share in the same way what they're going through.
That's a good word to use, isolating. And as you listen to the conversation today, you can also answer that question that I asked on Facebook. What's the best advice you were given about raising teenagers? I want to tell you what some people are saying, but the main question that I have for you that I need you to answer, you got to answer this one is, what is success? What is the goal of parenting a teen? Because I'm sensing that it's not, here's the outcome that I need to have happen. This is what my teenager has to turn out. It is more, this is the process that I am going through to do all I can to fill in the blank. So what's success look like?
You know, I think success in parenting teens is the question is really, what is success as being a human? And so what I would actually say is my goal is to walk with God and glorify God. That's my life goal. You know, how do I know him and how do I walk with him in this life and how do I honor him? And so I think as parents, what we have to focus on is, am I living in relationship with God? Am I knowing him more through his word? And am I seeking to honor him, whatever I do? That's actually my goal. And I believe a life lived in pursuit of that goal is going to greatly impact our children for good. It doesn't mean that they will all come to faith. I mean, we all know a lot of wonderful Christian parents whose children have rebelled. We even see this in the story of the prodigal son. Just because you're a loving, kind, godly parent, it doesn't always impact our kids in the way we would like. However, what I can say is my goal in parenting is to walk with God and glorify and honor him as I do so. And I think that is an achievable goal. You know, we can seek to do that and walk with him. And, you know, of course, we're going to make a lot of mistakes and need a lot of forgiveness, but that's part of being human. That's what God knows that. And so he set out a plan to help us with that.
What you have just said has been borne out in a lot of the people I've talked with through the years, and I've seen it happen that parenting, especially the teenage years, is more about the parent than it is the teenager, in the sense that if the parent looks at these teenage years and all the stress and the struggles and the challenge of those years, if the parent looks at this as, what is God doing here inside of me in this, then they will respond to the struggles and the difficulties and the successes as well, in a different way, because they're seeing this is from the hand of God that I'm going through this right now. And you react differently than being all upset and yelling. And you are more apt to listen to your teenager than you are to lecture, right?
Absolutely. Because the reality is, when we are fearful that all of our parenting efforts depend on us, we become controlling. And that is really different than being curious. When I know that my child's, you know, faith really, you know, that the Lord has to open their eyes, you know, to understand the truths of the gospel, the Lord has to do a work, give them a new heart, you know, replace their heart of stone with a heart of flesh. Like, that's the Lord's work. And then I can be curious about what they're wrestling through, what they're dealing with. But I think the more we view our child as kind of a product that we're creating, the more we're going to be controlling and fearful. And that's never good for our teens. Whereas when we actually view this child as God's child, and we have the great privilege of helping raise this child and bring them up to hopefully know the things of the Lord and know the God's word and all of that, that puts us in a very, we're a steward of this child. We're not the owner of this child. God Yes. created this child, and we get to be a wonderful part in their life.
Okay, so Judas says, you know, what's the best advice? She says, listen, listen, listen. Mm-hmm. And then Vicia says, listen more than talk. Keep music off in the car so I can hear what's on their heart, which is, you know, a bad thing if you're listening to Chris Fabry live, but I agree with her. And then Martha says, don't react before listening and giving yourself time to evaluate. Often they are responding in an emotional state, but it's real to them. Listen, wait, and then decide how to proceed. Respect their feelings and realize you're not dealing with a child anymore, but a young adult that you're raising to be an independent adult, not a child. So talk about how important listening is.
Wow, that's great advice. I mean, your audience, yeah, that's amazing. I just completely agree. I think, look, when our kids are two and they do something wrong, this is one of those principles. We know, you know, we're supposed to correct misbehavior. That's a principle of parenting. When they're two, you get into a habit of doing that immediately. Because if you wait 24 hours, you know, the two-year-old can't remember, oh yeah, I wasn't supposed to run in the street, you know, or whatever. You can't correct that behavior later and put them in timeout or something. However, with a teenager, sometimes when they come in hot, you know, and they're walking in with a really bad attitude and they're slamming doors, it's actually a really good time just to pause and to let their emotional, you know, turbulence kind of settle down. And you can still have a conversation later. But I think at those points, the best thing you can do is maybe ask a question. Hey, how was, you know, did something happen today at school? And they might not want to talk about it then. They might even need to cool down before they can talk about it. And that's okay. I think taking that patient view of parenting in the teen years is really important.
And the curiosity, even with, you know, music these days and all of the differences with music, rather than saying, boy, I can't stand that, you got to turn that off, put your headphones on, I don't want to hear that. The question of, so tell me why that artist, you know, tell me why that song means, so you actually get into the teenager's life and you learn something about them. When, and it doesn't mean that you have to love the same music that they do. You're just curious about it.
Exactly. I mean, it just shows you're interested in them as a human. And, you know, you're saying, hey, tell me more. Do your friends like this band too? You know, and so it just helps you know their friends. It helps you know about their life. And it just doesn't come off, again, so much as though I'm just here to control what you like and what you listen to and what you're doing.
Yeah, because the goal is, you know, success is launching them into adulthood so that you give them the opportunity to make decisions while they're under your roof. And that's a really hard thing for, you know, somebody like me. I want control and I don't, you got to drive this amount, you know, of the speed limit, et cetera, et cetera. And you let go of some of those things, you let them make decisions and they make mistakes at that. Again, the goal is not to have them not make mistakes any more than it is you. It's for them to be able to see them and correct themselves because they're going to be making their own decisions pretty soon.
Exactly. And so if you control every decision until they leave the house at 18, they are actually going to be launched into adulthood without the ability to navigate all of the decisions that are out there. They need to try and they actually need to fail. I mean, I think we can all look back in our teen years and remember mistakes we made that we actually really learn from, whether it's we forgot to turn a high school paper in and we got a zero on it, you know? And so what we're trying to do as parents is just give them appropriate places to fail, right? You know, so if they forget a homework assignment, they're going to survive that. If they don't make the team, they're going to survive that. You know, we obviously want to protect them as much as we can from larger failures that could happen, from things that could really harm them physically or harm others physically, obviously. But there are kind of appropriate ways where we need to not get involved. Like if our kid doesn't make the team, we just need to walk them through that failure and walk alongside them as best we can.
Or your child does make the team and they don't get to play as much as you think they ought to. That's the exactly. Other thing where, you know, the sports addicted parents are there always there yelling at the umpire or whatever, to be able to give the child the gravitas, the control of their own emotion and everything, to go to the coach themselves and to fend for themselves without you being the helicopter or the person yelling, that tells the child something too, the confidence that you have in them to stick up for themselves.
That's right. And they get to learn, here's the appropriate way when you think you've been mistreated or wronged in some way, here's the appropriate way to do it. And they need to learn to do that because, I mean, I hope when they get to college, you're not calling professors. I mean, you shouldn't be for sure. So we need to start that process younger so that they can start learning how to use their voice in an appropriate way.
But what you just said, there's some parent listening right now who's like, wait, did you say I'm supposed to allow them to fail? No, my child can't fail. I want you to talk about that. Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age is our featured resource by Melissa Krueger. You can find it. Just click through today's information at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. That parent that says, letting my child, but they forgot their lunch. They're going to go hot. They're going to starve by the time they get home. I can't just go. I have to go there. And I think in my own parenting, I have, even it with presents, you know, for birthdays or Christmas or whatever, I've identified so much with a child that hasn't, you know, had a good birthday, quote unquote, or you got what they want for Christmas. And it's like, oh, I know what that feels like. And I don't want them to feel that. And you can stunt their growth by overprotecting their own heart. I think you agree with me there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one opportunity we have as parents is actually to help our kids see you're a lot more resilient than you think. And resilience is a good thing. It's something that they're going to need in life because life does not go the way we all want it to go many days. And so I think that's really actually a gift to our kids is to help them start to realize they're tougher than they thought and they can actually deal with disappointment. And that's going to set them up well for life, to learn how to work hard, to learn that when, hey, it doesn't go your way, you're going to survive this and we're going to move on. And what I would say as a parent, it's my responsibility to bring calm to those moments. It's normal for our kid to be upset, you know, when they're going through something like that for the first time. It doesn't serve them well if we jump into it with all of our emotions. Sometimes I just say to myself, I have to fake the calm that I'm not feeling inside right now because I'm mad too, right? You know, I'm like, I want my kid playing or they should have made that team. They don't need to bear my emotional response. They need me to help them work through how should we think about this and to be a calming presence in their life because the teen years has enough tumultuousness in it for them. So we want to help them in those years as best we can.
And not to give pat answers to the child, you know, if they're really struggling with this, it's not that big a deal. You know, saying that only adds to their frustration, but also to the parents as well. Oh, we had those kids and we had those struggles and it passes. And when I used to hear that as a dad, you know, of teenagers, it's like, well, okay, that may be true, but that really doesn't help me right here because I'm going through some angst and some struggle and a challenge with this child. And just talking about it, having a friend, having confidant and a unified front with a mom and dad is really important, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, and even in that moment, if your friend said, hey, I remember going through this, can we pray about it right now for you? Because I know how hard this is and the Lord can help you get through it. Let's pray and ask. I think there's such an opportunity there. And this is true even with our teens. When we can't solve their life, we can teach them how to rely on God. And one of those ways is through prayer. So, I mean, even on the silliest of things, like a test score or whatever, I mean, we pray for all of those things in our family. And that helps our teens see we are taking it seriously. Yes. What they're going through matters. And so it's actually so serious, you know, we're going to take it to God and we're going to ask him to help us because that sets them up for life. When you're facing something that you don't know what to do, you can always pray. And that's what we're trying to model.
And that's where the hope comes from, too, because you're not saying, all right, here's the 10 things that you need to do. Here's the prescription for your parenting to get everything to come out the way that you want it to. The hope is that God is involved here in your life as a parent and their life as kids. You are stewarding that, and you're relying on His power in your life. I want you to talk about that when we come back from a break here. Melissa Krueger is joining us at the back fence. I'm going to open the phone lines. Are you the parent of a teenager and you're going through a struggle right now? Or have you gotten some really good advice in your parenting of a teenager that you want to share with somebody else? Give me a call, 877-548-3675. If you go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see that book by Melissa, Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org. And I want to read some more of the best advice that you were given about raising teenagers from our Facebook page. You can respond there as well. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org. More straight ahead on Moody Radio. Parenting with Hope is our topic today. We'll get right back to Melissa Krueger, but I want to mention a person who doesn't feel hope today. Might be somebody in your church, in your neighborhood, who doesn't want to be a parent yet, but they have a positive pregnancy test that they're looking at. And the culture says, get rid of it. Your body, your choice. I'm so glad CareNet has a pregnancy decision line where counselors provide answers and the hope that women and men need who call. But we need more in this culture than somebody to answer the phone. And that's why CareNet began the Church Engagement Initiative. I think a lot of people are asking, how do I turn this conviction that I have, this rock solid belief in the dignity of the unborn, into action? Making Life Disciples is a program to equip churches to provide the compassion, the hope, the help, and the discipleship to women and men who are considering abortion right now. You can find out more. Click the green CareNet button at Chris Fabry Live. You'll see a note from CareNet to you as a listener to this program. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org. Click the green CareNet button today, right there. And you'll also find out more about Melissa Krueger, Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. And I'm going to go back to the Facebook answers that I have here. Well, there's Stacy says this: the thing that I learned, the best advice that I had was to let my son try anything he wanted, but he had to do 10 of it, 10 piano lessons, Little League games, golf lessons, etc. Our son wanted to quit after his third guitar lesson, and we said, no, you agreed to 10. Somewhere around lesson 7, it clicked for him. He went on to get a music degree. He's a producer in Nashville now. And she says, I think often what the trajectory of his life would have been if we would have let him quit after 3 lessons. What do you think about that, Melissa?
I love that. Well, here's the thing. They told him ahead of time, hey, right, Here's our expectation if you want to do it. So there's buy-in from the teen, there's agreement up front, and then you're just holding them to what they agreed to. I think sometimes when it becomes, we're going to stick out a sport because, you know, we've done it for 5 years, and it becomes about the parent's desire, that's when I'm like, you know, if the teen's done, it's okay that they're done. Even though you've done ballet for 5 years, you know, they might be done with it at 13. And that's okay, because we're all going to be done with some sport at some age. Most likely, most of us are going to not continue to college and pro sports in some ways.
When you were raising your teenagers, what advice or resources did you wish you had?
You know, honestly, I just did not find many books on how to be the parent of a teenager, which is why I ended up writing this one. There were lots for mothering in the young years, lots and lots and lots of books on that. But there, I really struggled to find books that could help me with teen development and could help me even understand how I need to be as a parent. And so I think when they're little, there's a ton about like, oh, at 6 months, they should be able to turn their head this way. At 12 months, they should be walking. And you know, all of these just normal stages. Well, teens are actually still in a developmental stage. They may look like adults, but there are actually things going on with them that are very different than adults. And we need to understand those things. For instance, a teen needs more sleep than I do as an adult. They're not being lazy. It's biological. They need more sleep. And so how can we live in a sympathetic, understanding way with the developmental stage they're in? And just books like that, I really struggle to find those things.
Yes. So you've written this about principles and not prescriptions, and yet there are these things that happen. And you told me before the program that one of your least favorite things to do was to teach your kids to drive. And there's a story about one of your kids backing into the garage door. I've had that happen too. Tell us that story.
Well, that story was actually me. So when I was a teenager, I was late. I was late to work. I was running down the stairs. I jumped in the car and I put the car in reverse. And all of a sudden I heard this horrible crash. It totally crashed into the garage door. My mom heard the crash. She came outside. She looked at me and she gave me the keys to her car immediately. She said, "You're late for work. Go ahead. We'll handle it." So right then there was this moment of grace. She didn't scold me. She didn't yell at me. She just was like, "Take the keys." She understood what needed to happen in that moment. And she sent me away. And then by the time I got home, my dad had somehow managed to get my car out of the garage. And the garage was still obviously pretty much in shambles, but he just laughed, you know, walked in the door and he was like, "Girl, how did that happen?" In his patient, kind way. And, you know, neither of them ever lectured me about it. They never scolded me about it. They realized I was extremely apologetic for what I had done and I had made a mistake. And they really recognized she made a mistake here. And they were great about it. And I can tell you, it's something we still laugh about to this day. I mean, what could have been such a terrible teenage memory has actually turned into a really tender one. And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. So grace, that's not, there's permissive parents and permissive homes. That's different than having a gracious home, right?
Absolutely. Here's the thing. To have a gracious home, you actually have to have a standard. So a standard is required so that you can be gracious when it's not met. You know, so it is not like my parents were permissive and said, "Drive through the garage door whenever you want." Like, that's not what they were doing. Obviously, they would prefer me not to drive through the garage door. But when I made a mistake and did, they were very gracious with me in that moment.
Melissa Krueger is with us. If you go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see Parenting with Hope. It's our featured resource today. I want to talk with Emma, because Emma has been listening to what we're talking about. And what I just mentioned about CareNet. Emma, go right ahead. Why did you call today?
Hi. I called because I just had heard that you wanted to talk, or you wanted to reach out to those young ladies, teenagers, or just young ladies who are pregnant and are possibly thinking of an abortion. And I just wanted to share my story just to give hope that I was a teenager who had gotten, I was 18 when I first got married, and my ex-husband was an alcoholic. And so I was very close to leaving him, and so I was alone. And so anyway, when I decided to make that decision to leave, I was pregnant, and I didn't want to have my child. I had felt that I was finally free and I wanted to move on, but somehow my mother heard of it. And then she says to me, "You know what, come on, let's just go see how everything's going." And she was very kind. She's a woman of God, and she was just great about everything. And we went, we had an ultrasound. And so, I decided to keep my child. I had a son, and now my son is 25. Sorry, it makes me emotional.
Yeah.
My son is 25, and he went to Moody Bible Institute in Chicago. And he is now going to, he's going to do an internship in Europe. So I just want to share that.
Oh, Emma. What a real struggle that you were in at that point that you describe. Melissa, respond, because there's probably a parent listening who's been through similar something, or maybe right now with their own teenager.
Emma, that's so beautiful. I actually, my husband's mom was adopted. My nephew was adopted, and one of my best friends was adopted. And I remember thinking how different my world would be if their moms had not said yes to having them. And so I think sometimes we look around us and we don't realize how blessed we are by the people who chose to say yes and have these babies. But it's just such a beautiful story. I'm so glad you shared it. My oldest daughter's name is Emma. So I love getting to hear from you. That's so sweet.
Thank you, Emma. And that, that her call, I always say here that, you know, your call, your story might be just the thing that somebody else needs to hear. And maybe that's true as you listen today. Melissa Krueger is with us. Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age is our featured resource. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org and you can find out more about it right there. chrisfabrylive.org. More of your calls and more of those Facebook responses coming up straight ahead on Moody Radio. We're talking about raising teenagers today at the back fence. Evie says, don't take it personally. Kids lash out. They still love you. Pick your battles, says Annie. My own advice, Shirley says, don't pray for patience, pray for grace. That's pretty good. And Beth says, try to stay up until they come home after being out. That's when they want to talk. Unfortunately, I was rarely able to do it. Melissa Krueger has written Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. Do you agree with those tips, Melissa?
Absolutely. Especially the late night being available then. It's so hard because, you know, you're so tired. But it really is when I found that my kids were the most talkative was normally around 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock at night. So it's one of those seasons.
Let's say, yeah, extra coffee, right? Let's hear from Gwen in Tennessee. Hi, Gwen. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
I found myself being a single parent in Chattanooga, Tennessee, when my son was 5 years old. And I thought, and I had no family here. And I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this as a single parent? So I start, and I thought, I don't even know what I want to do with my life. So I started asking him extremely early, what do you think you want to do? And I didn't care if his choices changed every week. I just wanted him thinking about it at 5 years old, what he wanted to be when he grew up. And I thought, you know, give him a head start, at least having him thinking about it. And then later in life, I also told him we were only activities or only support I had was my church. And so I feel like a child, the morals and principles and standards that you raise your child by, that's instilled very early. So when he was in high school, I had two different occasions where parents asked me, as a single parent, asked me out to dinner and said, hey, why is Jonathan so outgoing? Why is he so determined? Why is he so mature? And I said, when he was young, I told him that I will always love you. I will, no matter what you do in life, no matter what you do every day. I said, but when you go to bed at night, when you lay your head on your pillow, if you've compromised your morals, principles, or standards that you live your life by, you're going to disappoint yourself and you're going to have to live with yourself. And I said, I will always love you. I said, in saying that, Jonathan, you can do anything you want to do. Every day, when you get up, you can go out and do anything you want to do. I said, but I have standards too. And if you decide to be promiscuous or have a child out of wedlock, I said, you're always welcome at my house on Sunday afternoon for dinner, but you can't live with me. I said, because there's a consequences to your choices. And I said, and I told parents, I said, I think that Jonathan's always known that he's in control of his life, and that he had to be thinking about things. And I didn't try to control him. I wanted him to be able to, you know, make responsible choices.
And feel the consequences of the of a bad choice, if that's what happens. So, and being able to give him that vision, I'm going to love you no matter what. That echoes throughout your book, Melissa. You really want to that, you know, the child to hear, I love you, and you can not, and not approve of some of the choices, but at least listen to them and affirm the child, even if they're making a mistake with their life. What do you say, Melissa?
That's exactly right. I mean, studies show time and time again, homes with high warmth, high degrees of affection, high degrees of love, as well as high expectation, an understanding of there will be consequences, you know, those type of things, married together, that's the best environment for kids to grow up in. High warmth with high expectations, 100%. That's really good for teens.
Yeah. Gwen, thanks for your call today. I have to get to one other area because this is the number one question that you get about parenting teenagers. Parenting with Hope is Melissa's book. What about technology? That is the big thing and the big challenge for parents today and teens, right?
That's right. And basically what we're seeing as the studies have come out is that every hour a child spends on their phone, they are less happy. And so I think all of us as parents, we want our kids, you know, you often say, I just want them to be happy. Well, their cell phones are actually making them incredibly unhappy. And so I think the more research comes out, the more we will start to understand. But hear me, as a parent, I have a lot of sympathy. I mean, when cell phones and smartphones were really becoming normalized was exactly when I had my first teen. And so there was no research. There was no understanding of what these little devices might do or what social media, the impacts of that. And so, you know, I gave my daughter a smartphone, you know, at 13, and she was allowed to have Instagram because I just viewed it as a place to share pictures. I hadn't really considered what do all those little hearts do to their heart, you know, if they don't get liked or if they do get liked. But what I will say is this, it was a beautiful thing. She was 13. We had a guest preacher at church, and he didn't preach about social media at all. It wasn't even a discussion at that point. He just preached on not wasting your life. And my daughter got in the car after church, and she looked at me. She goes, I'm going to delete Instagram. I just realized it's a waste of my time. And so what I always like to tell parents with technology and with there's always something new coming at us. But the basics of God's word, prayer, and the church really do form this kind of foundation for our kids where God can get to them, even when we don't know there's something that's dangerous. You know, I didn't know that social media might be dangerous for my teen, and yet God did. And he can help us even when there are dangers we don't know. But I would say, as a parent now, what I always recommend is kind of like driving. You know, before a teen's allowed to drive, they have to take a class. At least in my state, they do. They have to take a class. They have to do a whole year of driving before they're allowed to go out on their own. And I think we should probably approach cell phone use with a little bit of the same caution. You know, they should maybe read a book about how it might affect them and really have to think through, hey, before I give you this device, what are our rules and how are we to drive the phone, so to speak, just like right. We would with a car?
Well, and it goes back to the modeling that we've talked all about and you talk about in the book. If the parent says, you can't do this because you're wasting your life, you're wasting your time, you know, you're lecturing, but you are on your phone and you're on your computer and you're basing your worth on how many likes you get, you know, that speaks volumes to kids, right?
Well, in every single way, our example is speaking, you know, what we really believe to them. I mean, and that is terrifying as a parent in a lot of ways, but it's also encouraging because, again, studies show that parents really are a huge impact on their teen. We think they're not listening. We think they're not paying attention. We think culture is winning, but the reality is what's happening in our homes is really significant, and kids are paying attention to how we live our lives. So yeah, if we are glued to our cell phone, they're going to value it too, and that's what they're going to be glued to as well.
Well, this is a really hope-filled resource for people and for parents, especially Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. And a lot of the fear that's out there right now with, you know, going away from church and away from the parents' faith that, you know, if my child, my teenager, and they go to college and they're going to abandon this. I just felt a sense of calm and hope and reliance on God's power in my life and then in my kids' life as I went through this. And I think that's really what you hope for us, isn't it, Melissa?
Absolutely. We can be hopeful because God is at work in everything that's happening.
God bless you, friend. Thanks for spending time with us here at The Back Fence and giving us a little bit of hope as well. You have a great day, okay?
You too. Thanks for having me.
Melissa Kruger, K-R-U-G-E-R, again, Vice President of Discipleship Programming at the Gospel Coalition and author of Parenting with Hope, Raising Teens for Christ in a Secular Age. It's our featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. I have a question for you that we're going to answer tomorrow. We have two guests on the program, and we're going to talk about women in the Word, women and Bible studies in the home. Do you want to have a Bible study in your home? Do you want to start something like that in your own community? You've always thought about it, but you've been scared to do it. You're going to hear more about that. Or what have you received from a Bible study in your church or in your community? I want to talk with you about that. We're going to have that good conversation tomorrow right here on a Friday. We'll give a Friday sigh as well at the Radio Backyard Fence. Again, go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Thanks a lot for your support. And come on back next time for Chris Fabry Live, a production of Moody Radio, which is a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.